This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:33. Federal investigators have released preliminary findings from their investigation into January's chemical spill at Freedom Industries in Charleston. While it may take many months for their final recommendations, the Chemical Safety Board's initial findings may begin to clear up some unanswered questions. Ashton Mara reports.
U.S. Chemical Safety Board investigators say they've nearly completed the process of collecting evidence and information about the Freedom Industries spill. They will soon begin to analyze that data, giving West Virginians a clearer picture of the circumstances surrounding the incident. While he cautioned their investigation is still in the preliminary stage, lead investigator Johnny Banks already has some surprising details to share. First, Banks described the state of the tanks on site. Inspections prove that tank 396 was in fact the source of the leak. Banks describes the two holes the team found on the bottom of the tank earlier this year.
These are those two holes, the three-quarter inch hole and the little bit more than half an inch. But then you'll also see that there is some pitting observed here, which indicates areas that would have potentially failed as well.
The pits in the metal and the holes themselves, Banks says, were caused by corrosion. Water leaked in from the top of the tank and pooled in the bottom, wearing away the enclosure and causing the punctures. Banks says that means the holes were formed from the inside out, not the outside in, as Freedom officials have previously claimed. Banks says investigators also found a hole in a second tank on site, which was also holding the chemical crude MCHM. Just like the first, this tank was also corroded, with the same pitting seen in tank 396.
These are key indicators to us that there was a serious corrosion problem growing in all the tanks, and it just manifested itself in 396, the worst, but 397 is showing signs of that type of failure.
And that growing problem led Banks and his team to this conclusion.
Due to the extensive corrosion, the CSB suspects that the leaks existed prior to January 9th.
Banks says his team will analyze soil on site to determine when the leak actually began, but cautions they may not be able to narrow down an exact date. The CSB's final report will include recommendations for tank regulations moving forward and will address tanks placed upstream of a water intake and emergency planning and notification. There's no date set for the release of that final report. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
In one Pennsylvania town, locals say gas drilling ruined their water, but the state has said drilling had nothing to do with the bad water. Scientists are still trying to figure out what happened. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier takes a closer look.
Lee Dreyer is the pastor of the White Oak Springs Presbyterian Church. It's located on a country road about an hour north of Pittsburgh. Every Monday, he wheels out big cardboard boxes from what used to be a Sunday school classroom into the church parking lot. People pull up in cars and trucks and load the boxes in the back.
Get away with that. It's not going that far. It's only...
What's in the boxes? 6-gallon jugs of spring water. You've heard of a food drive? This is a water drive. Dreyer's been doing this for 2 years. The church buys the water using donations and gives it to families from a nearby neighborhood called the Woodlands. Many in the neighborhood blame problems with their water on drilling rigs nearby. Dreyer has seen the water firsthand.
We went out there to the Woodlands, and one guy showed us some of the water that came out of his spigot, and it was about the color of used motor oil.
One of the people picking up today is John Fair. Fair says he drilled a well 3 years ago at his home. The water was perfect, he said. Then it started smelling bad, like rotten eggs, and it looked like mud. 3 years later, he gets all his drinking water from the water drive.
And I say, yeah, you can't drink it. So, yeah, just keep doing what you do. Do your wash and, you know, take a shower and do your dishes. That's about all you can do. You can't use it for drinking or anything, you know.
At his home, Fair turns on the water in his kitchen sink.
You want to taste it?
I'll taste it. Oof. Tastes like, it was like a rusty chain in the cup for, tastes like rust.
Is that the way water's supposed to be?
Probably not.
The company drilling the nearby gas wells, Rex Energy, initially provided Fair and his neighbors with drinking water. But that ended in 2012, when the state said gas activities were not the cause of the water problems. The state's Department of Environmental Protection found water had high levels of iron and manganese before drilling began. And the EPA agreed. Some in the Woodlands say they've had problems with their well water in the past, that it smelled bad, or that after rainstorms it became dirty. But they say it got worse when drilling commenced, and some of them, including Fair, are suing RECs because of it. What went wrong with the water? John Stoltz is a microbiologist at Duquesne University who's trying to answer that question. He's looked at the same data the DEP has.
And we see that, you know, a lot of the well data that we have, or the wells, are impacted by mine drainage.
Mine drainage, not brine from gas drilling or chemicals used in fracking. The area does have abandoned coal mines nearby, so maybe mine water has been in the water wells all along? From the interviews and tests he's done, Stoltz thinks the water got worse around the time drilling began.
A good number of people no longer have potable water. It seems to coincide with when the drilling commenced and went, you know, full bore, so to speak.
With funding from the Heinz Endowments and the Colcom Foundation, Stoltz is trying to piece together an answer. He says it's a complicated picture underground.
If we were pristine, no one had ever drilled a well in Pennsylvania, no one had ever mined a mine in Pennsylvania, and they started drilling this, it would be a lot easier. But, you know, we have close to 1 million wells that have been drilled prior to all this activity. So that's a lot of holes in the ground.
And Stoltz thinks maybe one hole in the ground might have influenced another. But Rex Energy disputes this interpretation. The company didn't return phone calls for the story, but in the past has stood by the DEP's findings that its activities had nothing to do with water problems in the community. Water contamination concerns have followed the boom in the state's Marcellus Shale gas fields since it began. Gas activities damaged groundwater in more than 160 cases across the state, according to DEP records obtained by the Times Tribune of Scranton. And last month, a drilling rig north of Pittsburgh punched through an abandoned coal mine, forcing mine drainage into a nearby stream and impacting groundwater in nearby homes. But these incidents represent a minority of cases in a state with more than 8,000 Marcellus Shale gas wells. And the industry points out that the state has steadily improved its construction standards for drilling. Still, few hard numbers exist on how safe shale gas drilling has been for groundwater. Sue Brantley is a geochemist at Penn State who's trying to change that. She's been putting together groundwater tests from across the Marcellus region, like one that appeared on her screen from northeastern Pennsylvania.
Here's barium. This is one of the signatures for Marcellus.
Her project, called the Shale Network, is funded by the National Science Foundation and has over 1 million of these data points so far. But she wants more.
Well, the data that we're really interested in right now is data that was collected before drilling by gas companies.
Before they drill a well, gas companies typically test nearby groundwater. This can help shield them from contamination claims. These results are locked away, though, because legally they're the private property of the homeowner, like a patient's medical records. There's another hurdle for scientists like Brantley, the legal system. In cases of alleged groundwater contamination, landowners will often sue a drilling company.
Very often, the companies will settle with people if they'll sign a non-disclosure agreement, and then the data doesn't come out. And that's just really, it's a big loss.
Brantley might have found a workaround. Gas companies send their results to the DEP. Her lab is working with the DEP to take identifying information like names and addresses out of these tests and put them into their database. A lot of these results have to be hand-entered into the computer. Slowly, a picture is starting to emerge.
We, in our database, have not found a lot of incidents of contamination due to the shale gas industry. There are some incidents for sure, but we haven't found a lot of them.
Another problem for scientists is just nature itself. Fred Baldessari is a former DEP geologist. He's been studying underground methane migration. In a study he did with help from gas companies, he found that gas that looked like it was from the Marcellus Shale was actually hanging out in rocks closer to the surface. He thinks this has tricked other researchers into thinking gas found in shallow parts of the ground was the result of drilling or fracking in the Marcellus.
Some researchers were suggesting that when you see that deep gas, it must be from the Marcellus up in the groundwater system. And we're saying That's not an accurate statement.
The confusing nature of studying the underground doesn't obscure Baldessari's overall assessment that there should be a way to do fracking without contaminating groundwater, and that the industry's practices now are better and safer than they were 5 years ago. But exactly how safe is it now? To find that out, scientists say, more study is needed. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
The Allegheny Front is produced in Pittsburgh and reports on Pennsylvania's environment. You can find out more at AlleghenyFront.org. This is West Virginia Morning at 7:44. Mostly sunny skies today. Temperatures will be in the 70s, clear overnight with lows in the 50s. Partly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms on Friday. Rain and thunderstorms in our forecast for the weekend.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit WVDRS.org for employer services.
Members of the Matewan community took part yesterday in the latest meeting about ideas to turn things around in the southern West Virginia community. Clark Davis has the story.
Citizens of the small town in Mingo County are following the steps carefully outlined by the West Virginia Development Hub to take their ideas from paper to a reality in the community. People like Kathy McCoy say the community means too much not to.
Well, I think pretty much most of the people who are here, you know, love our community and live here. And I think that we all have a goal to see that things do better. And I just feel that's the type of people we need to jump on board.
McCoy is the owner of Hatfield McCoy Inn and Wingo's Grill in Matewan. She's had to file bankruptcy twice in her 20 years as a business owner. McCoy says the community has never done a great job at highlighting what's already there.
You know, I think it's great that we have ideals to move forward with and bigger things, but I think if we would take it one step at a time and advertise what we do have and clean and open up, you know, some of our historical sites that we have in town, and I think there's a whole lot that we can do, you know, now if we could just get it on the map.
Besides also taking part in the latest Turn This Town Around workshops yesterday, it was announced that a grant of $3,000 was presented to groups focused on making Matewan a bike-friendly community and improving exercise environments in the town. It was one of 46 proposals in the state for the Try This Mini Grant program to help different communities improve their area. Kelly Webb is part of the group trying to make the town a bike-friendly community.
One thing I'm trying to implement is the bike-friendly Matewan, and there's actually a huge, huge market for bicyclists. What people don't understand here is that the trails are a natural form, and they're something that they can truly use, and we already have the resources, and it's just an extra effort.
The My Mobile Market also presented local families with $30 vouchers for kids to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables. It's the progression of the ideas that will wake up the area, says Russell Smith.
I've seen it do some great things, and I've seen it start to fall asleep, as if the whole city was just falling in on itself. And I wanted to wake it back up. And the Turn This Town Around program seems to be offering the best chance to get people involved and excited about their community again.
Smith says it's a chance to keep Matewan from drifting away like other small towns.
We're at the crux of historic opportunities throughout the early 20th century. Mine wars, the forming of the UMWA has its heart in this area. This town needs to be preserved even for that alone.
Smith says they can't waste their chance. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Matewan.
While you think all children would be excited to be away from school this summer, many throughout the state continue to go. Jared Klein reports from this summer school from Summers County.
It's mid-afternoon here at Hinton Area Elementary School. It's July, but the classroom is packed with around 20 children listening closely to their yoga instructor.
So take your great big breath in when you reach up.
Instead of being stuck at home, these children are learning about nutrition, physical activity, cooperation, and making friends as part of the REACH program, which stands for Reaching Everyone to Assist in Creating Healthier Homes. Ian Gardner will be entering sixth grade. This is his second year in the program. He says that he was originally unsure about some of the activities, especially yoga.
Some stretches I did here were some stretches I thought I would break some part of my body for. I really did. And today I started flexing. I was like, wow, this is cool. I thought it was going to be boring and quiet, but not so much. The stretches were nice, and they almost all represented something.
But it's not only physical activity Ian is learning. He's also finding new ways to eat healthy. The program provides nutritional foods at breakfast and lunch. Ian says some of the food, which he refers to as the good stuff, came as a surprise to him.
I learned about some green foods I never thought I would like peppers and stuff that were green, the green peppers and orange. I never thought they would be good. I mean, they just looked weird and they felt weird. And then I came here and I was like, wow, it's pretty good and it's healthy because school feeds you healthy food.
As the REACH Family Resource Center coordinator, Amanda Gill says it's this type of appreciation that motivates her to continue her mission to complete her degree in elementary teaching.
And to see some of these kids and say, wow, you care about me. You made a difference in my day, and I really like coming to your program. It just makes you feel important and like you're making a difference.
The program continues during the school year with after-school tutoring and a free meal. And for those of you who still aren't convinced about yoga, Ian's got a few words of advice.
For people who haven't tried yoga, I mean, it's a very nice experience if you have not tried it. I mean, I thought it was kind of girly before I even tried it. There's all kinds of neat and cool poses that almost everybody would probably like, so I encourage you to try it.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jared Kleinman Hinton.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.